Hello, and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, James Jones. With me today is Guillaume Vayette.
Hello.
Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
John Lindemann.
It's good to be back, James.
It's good to have you. It is March 15th, 2018, and I'm not feeling very excited right now. I'm feeling real down. And apparently the answer is I need to play bingo for Switch because I'll get excited by everyone. But I'm not going to do that, Neil. You could send me review codes. I'm not going to play them. You can't make this happen.
We don't need this kind of artificial spark in our relationship, James. I know I excite you enough as it is.
Listen to Radio Free
We don't need any relationship aids.
Listen to Radio Free Nintendo and get excited by everyone.
Yeah, that's a screw that grown ups balls. That's the new tagline.
I can make that happen. Oh, I might need to make that happen.
What is the opposite of lobbying for a review copy? What's the proper term?
Forwarding the email back to the person that sent it. With just the text, no. Yeah, it's Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 563.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And John's back, as you saw earlier. And so now we're back to the full crew. John, you sent me one phrase about the Nintendo Direct last week, so I'm going to prompt it to you right now. Okay. Besides Smash Brothers in all caps, I think you sent me some exclamation points too and some related stuff. What's your thought?
Oh, on the Direct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much like Smash Brothers just kind of, it overshadowed everything. Quite literally, actually, based on the trailer.
Yes. Yeah, it did.
Yeah, but there you go. That's the big Christmas game. You know, we didn't. That's the thing. I mean, the timeline makes me wonder, you know, whether it's going to be, you know, some sort of a deluxe version.
So I'm gonna put y'all on the record right now. What is it?
Deluxe. I think it'll be.
Greg?
Deluxe plus.
What the fuck does that mean?
Cagey, Greg.
It's gonna be so sort of deluxe that it'll be verging on sort of what you'd get out of a new game, but probably technically you might consider it deluxe. I don't know, but they obviously haven't decided how they're going to market it yet.
Yeah. Guillaume?
I think this is going to be like a fully fledged Smash Brothers 8.
I actually want to hurt Guillaume right now, but
he's counting the Virtual Console release.
That's the same game.
Arcade games that nobody's
secret,
ever
oh, the
found.
The secret Smash Brothers arcade, yeah. The unreleased one that only Sakurai has a copy of.
PlayStation All-Stars is counting that as well.
It definitely does, yeah.
Wasn't there a second PlayStation All-Stars?
No, I think it failed.
But I know it failed. That doesn't necessarily mean it didn't get a sequel. The causation does not come into that statement. No, I think it's a full sequel. I think there'll be a lot of stuff that's like, oh, this is reminiscent. But you saw that going from Wii to Wii U. It's like, oh,
yeah,
a lot of this
thing.
Stuff
I mean,
it's kind of
an evolution anyway. You know, like that's why I kind of feel like the steps are getting more modest over time because obviously Wii U was the first time in HD. And,
right.
You know, this isn't. So I really kind of feel like it's going to be in a gray area between the two, and that's why they haven't committed thus far.
All right, so here's the – is Cloud Strife in it? That's your – is this a deluxe or not?
I think it's going to be Noctis.
Oh!
You know it.
Oh, John, I just
you
threw
know
it
it's
in
gonna
my
be
mouth.
So, it's going to be something from Final Fantasy 15. You oh. know it. Square is whoring those characters out everywhere.
Maybe they'll do like the 13 collection and get Lightning.
Oh god, it's gonna be Lightning! Oh god, I just threw up again. Oh, all right. Well, that's horrifying to think about. I don't think. Well, I think it's a new game. I don't think Cloud comes for the ride. Personally, but I could be wrong. Maybe it's a port. Maybe it's a. I want to thank you for enhanced plus or whatever bullshit you just threw out there.
Yeah, you got. It's always
fucking government right speak that you've put out here to describe your Smash Brothers port.
You look at like Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition or whatever. I mean, that's like plus, isn't it? Because it's the 3DS game, which was already, you know, the Wii U game with like what was previously DLC built into it, and then it's like now it's well, it's those two combined together and all the DLC that came after that packed into it. I mean, so, this is where we are.
So do you think it's going to be Super Smash Brothers for Switch Definitive Deluxe Edition?
Plus.
Wii
U. Super Smash Brothers for Wii U for Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Plus.
Plus cats, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, obviously. To be fair though, like that could be the new character.
Yeah.
You're playing. It's Nintendogs, and the alternate costume is the plus cats.
Mm-hmm.
Shit, they might do that. Sakurai's a crazy enough bastard to do that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, moving on. Moving swiftly away from this topic before it harms us even more. To new business. New business, John, as the returning member of our show.
Mm-hmm.
I would like you to start us off.
Certainly, yes. Yeah. So my new business is I decided out of pure curiosity to download Versus Super Mario Brothers for Switch, which...
Yeah, so you single-handedly the reason this keeps showing up at the top of the charts all the time.
You know what's... Okay, so what's
I'm
funny
I'm just imagining a sort of Memento-style scenario, except instead of administering someone's insulin, it's John buying Versus Super Mario Brothers every week.
Well, you know, I do look every week on the eShop, and I was like, well, I was in the mood to get something new, and, you know...
So you went for something incredibly old.
Exactly. Well, so my side rant about the eShop is I really wish that they had reviews, because at this point it's just become like a flood of indie games, and I have no idea which ones are good and which ones aren't, and I don't really feel
John,
like going on to Metacritic.
Hey, John, I've got some good news for you.
What?
I've just added you to the reviewer list over Nintendo World Report, so
you can
join in.
Yeah, God.
You can be the change you want to see, John. I mean, I would have thought
I've
you'd
got,
be happy.
I've got
about
a code
that.
For you for bingo if you want.
No,
to play that.
I'm totally good. I know you're trying to hawk your bingo code to the lowest bidder, but
John, I've reviewed 4 4s in a row. I can't take another one.
I know. Yeah,
it's not
I know,
why
but
I
this is
again,
you're actually proving four. You're proving my point, right? I don't know which ones are fours and which ones are eights or nines, right? So
there is a website.
They did dabble with you having user reviews on their website for a little bit, and then that was promptly sort of pulled.
People abused that in some way, or?
Yeah, I mean, maybe people were upset they couldn't give a zero star to Special Average Balloon, but I mean.
Yeah, so
anyways. I mean, the Wii U was a disaster, let's be clear.
Yes, anyways, so Greg is absolutely right. I did check the best-selling games, and there was Versus Super Mario Brothers, and I was like, I have Super Mario Brothers. I think I've kind of accepted within myself that I will have Super Mario Brothers on every single thing everywhere. I mean, I might as well just right out of the gate just buy it for every single Nintendo system I buy, because I'm going to get it eventually.
What if they also put the NES version of it out?
I would not get that. It's not unique enough, and I already have it. But if it went on sale,
What about them putting the Game Boy Color version, Super Mario Deluxe?
See, I don't know if I have that one. I look at it. You know, it's funny because as I said that, I literally looked up. And there's
staring him in the face.
No, I have a stack
it's
of Game Boy games.
Framed on his wall.
But what I have is I have the box sitting over there for the Game Boy Classic one for Super Mario Brothers.
Oh my God!
Yes, I have that one.
So it's the NES Anniversary range that they did.
Why did I buy that?
What if they
that.
Put that on Virtual Console? The NES port to Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, luckily they never went quite that far with Wii U Virtual Console, but
it got real close.
There's some things that walk up to that line.
Capcom kind of did. You know, they, yeah, they would put their SNES games and their GBA SNES ports.
Yeah, so, I mean, some of them are more substantively different than others. You know, like Super Ghouls and Ghosts does have extra levels and stuff, but...
Sure.
Yeah, there's some...
So it's your choice of, do you want to have two buttons or do you want to have extra levels?
Yeah, the thing is with that, because it's such an arcade-style game, it didn't need more than two.
Yeah, that's true. Mega Man... Extreme is in there too, where it's like, oh, this is just a remix, and okay, well, it's right next to the game that's remixing, so yay.
Thing about Mario Brothers DX is, of course, the, you know, the play area feels very cramped, but you do get the kind of lost levels is basically kind of built into it, and you know, right, you've got that multiplayer mode that they showed off at the championships last year, and the there's extra stuff.
The red
in there.
Coins, find Yoshi in the level.
Yeah.
So what we're saying, John, is you need to find five more ways to buy Mario Brothers by the end of the week.
Yeah, I know. I'm not living right.
I agree.
But yeah, so I picked this up again out of curiosity, just because it was such a... It was always because I remember seeing this game in the arcade when it first came out, and I always thought it was really weird. I never actually played it in the arcade because there were a couple of games in the Versus series. I think there was Versus Excitebike. There was Versus Punch-Out, right? I think if I remember that right. But yeah, so Versus Super Mario Brothers, I always thought it was a really weird choice because, like, I mean, there's nothing really, aside from different game modes and the fact that you're using quarters to play, there's really very little difference. Supposedly the enemy placement is a little different in some areas, but
yeah, so it's just something like certain levels are like swapped around, or like there's one that uses a layout from lost levels, or it seems very peculiar, like these little differences.
But I think the bigger differences show up later, you know, and initially it's more like, oh, okay, like there's supposed to be an invisible block here that gives me a one up, and it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so I haven't gotten too deep into it, but yeah, it's just interesting because this was always a game that I saw in the arcade, and I always used to walk by it, and I was like, why would I play that? I mean, I have almost literally the same hardware at home, and that game sitting at home.
Yeah, I can imagine that would, if before my time ever being in arcades, but I think I would have had the same reaction because, like, when I was older and saw arcade machines, it was always like, I want to see the hottest new graphics and sound and stuff, you know, that's what the arcades are for, not like for familiar things.
Yeah, I mean,
I remember I played it, and because I was like, oh, it's Mario, and I didn't own an NES at that point, so it was still kind of new, but I remember my older brother distinctly saying, like, don't play that, don't pay for that, it's just Mario.
Yeah. And you know, and I don't really think they've changed enough to, you know, justify, you know, spending quarters on this thing rather than, you know, just buying it for your NES. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. There's a couple of different game modes. There's like a caravan mode, and, you know, it has online leaderboards, so you can...
Yeah, the usual, you know, hamster things. Stuff. I was just kind of wondering, like, given this is not like the kind of fare that often is, you know, they're releasing a lot of the time, like a shoot 'em up, or how that kind of works with the Mario setup.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I haven't really played any of their stuff before.
Just the sort of, is it like the 5 minutes to get as many points as you can kind of stuff?
I think so, yeah. I don't think it's anything too crazy.
So how does it feel?
I mean, it's Super Mario Brothers. I mean, it doesn't feel any different. The only thing I did have to do is, you know, playing with the Joy-Cons, I'm playing it in portable mode. I don't bother usually playing on the TV a whole lot, but, the one thing I did have to do is I reconfigured the controllers, just because I always have a hard time with these newer D-pads or pseudo D-pads, whatever you can call them. This control is just fine with the analog stick, but with the buttons, I always have a hard time getting... I'm trying to think of how the original NES pads were set up button-wise, because it was B and A, right?
Yeah.
I'm just trying to think of how I use it, because how I play is I hold down dash all the time, and then I usually, you know. And so what I had to do for this was I had to map dash to Y, and then I mapped jump to B. So you know, that's how I kind of hold it. So I always hold down Y, and then I master.
Yeah, that's how they sort of adapted it for Super Mario World. You know, going to the four buttons on the Super Nintendo controller. In games such as New Super Mario Brothers, they would give you the option of like, do you want to cut it across like Y and B, or do you want to cut it across B and A? That was kind of an option, but because it's not the same, because B and A were next to each other rather than in the diamond, you know, configuration that Super Nintendo was. So I guess they could kind of see why some people might prefer to adapt it one way rather than the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for this one, it's, you know, dash is B, and the default is dash is B, and then A is jump. So I had to switch that around, but yeah. I mean, it still plays really well. I mean, it feels the same. There's no differences or anything like that. Took a little bit of getting used to for some reason. I don't know why. I think it's just kind of, it's a little bit weird playing it on the Switch screen, you know, because it has the two borders on the two sides.
Right.
On both sides of it. So that took a little bit of getting used to. But yeah, you know, I'm pleased with it so far.
Is it proper 4:3 or is it weird arcade resolution?
Let me check. I got it right here.
Because a lot of those arcade things had, like, weirdo resolutions.
Yeah, it's 4:3.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it looks... Now, the weird thing is, and I don't know why...
We got some music. There we go.
There you go. The weird thing is that when Mario has the fireballs, he's like this weird, like, yellow tinge. He's not white.
I wonder if that was something to do with the arcade board?
Yeah.
I think those were just arcadized NESs, though. I don't think there's anything special about them.
Yeah. Hmm. Maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's something like to make it easier to, to make it easier to, like, to distinguish the two or something? Like,
maybe it was to something to do with the color bleed. Maybe it looked better on a CRT screen or something.
Yeah, I mean,
the old days of like the Radioactive Man movie set or whatever. It's like, oh no, you can't. Cows don't look like cows on film. You got to tape a bunch of cats together or what? With CRT, no, but that's true. Like, you know, you would draw the graphics, like original resolution of NES games. You know, was not 4:3. But they were designing them with the thought that they would get stretched to 4:3 by CRT TV. So you kind of, you know, you weren't making them for how they actually looked in their original resolution. You were making them for how they would look at the end of it all. So I can imagine that being a factor.
Well, and Hamster is pretty obsessive about this stuff. So it's entirely plausible that they went and said, okay, well, this is what it would have looked like on an arcade monitor.
We're
going to slightly change his color palette a little bit.
And there are subtle differences, like in the fonts at the top of the screen and everything. They have like a little bit of like a blue tinge behind them. There's just like subtle differences where you look at it and you're like, that doesn't look right. You know, I mean, it looks more like what you would see on an arcade screen. I can't really describe it any more than that, but it looks like there's subtle additional colors that you wouldn't see on the NES version of the game, where it's just like white on, instead of white on black, it's like white with a blue shadow behind it to make it pop more at the top of the screen.
Yeah, so there, most games on the Versus system, which is the arcade system this ran on, do have some visual differences. So maybe it's not even the same hardware.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at a list of differences between this and the original game. And basically, it's just exactly what you'd expect from an arcade version. Less warp zones, harder, more enemies.
Yep.
So, great.
There you go. Suck on that, Bowser.
Gotta get those quarters.
Yeah.
Well, John, maybe to get to the bottom of this, you need to get V versus Ice Climber and also NES Ice Climber and, you know, Mario Brothers, VS Mario Brothers, and see spot the differences for those games.
I don't know if Ice Climbers was on the Versus system, but
really?
Wrecking Crew sure was.
Oh, okay.
They've been very slow with releasing this stuff, though, aren't they? I mean, you know, they talked about a lot of the Versus games, and then stuff like the Arcade Punch Out, you know, that was a completely unique game
from
NES Punch Out. And it's been several months now, and, you know, versus Super Mario Brothers, as we've already referenced, is, you know, a winner on the charts or whatever, but the trickle goes on.
All right, so I'm going to give you the most completely pointless versus arcade port. There is a versus pinball.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Wow.
An arcade video game of NES pinball in an arcade where there were probably pinball machines.
That's something. That's a ballsy move by Nintendo right there. That takes some moxie.
I just kind of lost the will to go on. All right, John, what else have you been playing?
I've been playing Rise of the Tomb Raider, which is on Xbox. It's the Game Pass game this month, so I decided to play it, which is actually interesting because I would never have really played it otherwise, unless I got it for like super cheap on sale. Yeah, I always kind of dismissed this game as a, I figured it would be an Uncharted clone, and, you know, I just relatively recently played through Uncharted 4, so I really wasn't interested in playing through another Uncharted-type game. Mm. But Rise of Tomb Raider is actually interesting because it adds, I'm trying to debate whether or not I actually like the gameplay. I probably like the gameplay more than the Uncharted games, just because the Uncharted games are very predictable now. Even though they have added some open world elements, like you can drive around in a Jeep and stuff like that, it is still kind of climb through, you know, solve some environmental, you know, traversal puzzles, and then there's a shootout, because there's always a shootout because you have to make it feel like a video game, right? And video games have gun battles. So right. That's kind of like, you know, like by the end of every Uncharted game, I feel like I'm saying, like, this game is really, really good, but at the same time, it's incredibly predictable, and I really wish they would alter the formula a little bit. So Rise of the Tomb Raider does that, and they do that, you know, there's still a lot of puzzles, like, you know, it's kind of the same deal where, you know, you're climbing up stuff and, you know, leaning across and then jumping over to the next ledge and doing all that kind of stuff. So they still have that sort of, you know, environmental traversal. But there's a lot more kind of character building. System-wise, they, you know, you gather experience as you go through different areas and do different things. There's a lot of crafting. Like you can, you know, upgrade, you know, you start off with a bow and arrow, and so you can upgrade your bow and arrow so that it, you know, shoots farther, you know, is more accurate, does more damage and stuff like that. And you do that by walking around and gathering stuff in the environment. You know, you break off some wood from a tree, and you can, you know, use that. You know, you get cloth if you kill an enemy, you can take cloth off of them and, you know, fashion that into various things, you know, bombs and sort of stuff like that. So I would say in that respect, it would be kind of more of a, it's more like kind of a mashup of, I would say, like Uncharted and The Last of Us, with like, but it has heavier crafting than The Last of Us does. The Last of Us is very like light crafting. Like you can get, you find a baseball bat and find some nails and combine them, and it's a spike bat. You know, this has kind of stuff.
This game started development post the boom of survival games.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean what that's now into like your battle royale. I mean, like, you're dropped on an island and you have to craft to survive.
Yeah.
And so this is a franchise that you can make a sort of philosophical link to that stuff. So I'm not surprised they leaned in pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of it. I mean, because you can. Yeah,
this game got real big.
Yeah, I mean, there's a strong emphasis on hunting. You know, so you can hunt, like you can like some of the materials that you need are from deer, you know, rabbits, bears, stuff like that. So you can like run through the forest and, you know, track these things down and hunt them. And you have to actually, if you want to craft stuff, you have to do that. Like the first big enemy that you face in the game is a bear. And you kind of learn from that, like, you know, you kind of get like the rare bear pelt from it, and you can use that to,
oh my God,
craft some crazy
there's
stuff
rarities
with it, right?
On bear pelts?
Not really rarity, but I'm just saying, like, that is, it's,
oh, okay.
A, there's,
oh, okay.
There's not, no, things aren't
this
like,
is a, well, it's entirely
there's not
plausible.
Like mythic, there's not like mythic bear pelts out there, but it's
this
like,
is entirely
it's like,
possible you kill a bear and he drops a legendary bear pelt.
I'm just saying, my point is there aren't many bears in the game, so it's like you would,
oh,
you know,
okay.
You're not
going to
get
okay.
bear pelts all the time, right?
So, okay.
They're like a boss character kind of thing. So
I'm that jaded enough that was a reality. It could have happened.
Hey, I don't blame you. But yeah, and it's really cool. You can get have the kind of what would you call it? It's called survival instinct, but it's it's like the I'm trying to think of
detective mode.
Yes. Well, you click and you can scan the area kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Detective mode in Batman. That's the first time I saw that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I was trying to think of another game. Like, there's dozens of games that use it. And yeah, that's one.
I mean, Metroid Prime has something similar ultimately. Like,
yeah.
Right. The scanning.
Yeah. It's more like something I've just played recently, but I can't think of what it is. I just can't remember. But yeah, it's like that. So you'll see, it highlights items that are kind of scannable. And from that, you build experience in the types of languages that you can translate. So if you're in different areas, you'll find different pieces of artwork on the walls and murals and relics and stuff like that. And, you can translate, and that also helps you find more stuff in your environment, because you'll find like a monolith that will have some language on there. And if you haven't read enough stuff, then you won't be able to translate what's on it. So therefore, you can't get, you won't be able to see collectibles on your map. Whereas otherwise, if you did have that language proficiency, you could come up to the monolith, translate it, and then you might see all of the documents that you can find in the area. So stuff like that. So it encourages you to explore the environment, gather things so you can craft stuff. And so it kind of adds that element on there that I think that for me is sort of missing in the Uncharted game. Not that I want it to turn into some kind of like grind kind of gather fest, but the Uncharted games are very much the same gameplay all the time. Whereas like Tomb Raider kind of encourages you to slow down, gather stuff, hunt a bit, and then move on to the next area. It's not just, puzzle, gunfight, puzzle, gunfight, puzzle, gunfight. So I think that's what I like about it. What I don't like about it is I think it's, the story so far is kind of cheeseball. It's sort of like, oh, my father, he died looking for this secret city. And, I promised him that I would find it. And, it's that kind of thing. And it's like, it's just
kind
of...
How can a city be a secret?
I don't know. And it's funny. All of these like ancient, hidden cities, they're all up in like the Himalayas.
Where you build your cities?
Yeah, of course. They're all in the Himalayas, right? So,
well, the tectonic plates have been moving. And so really, the Himalayas, I don't know. Maybe this was a city back when the Himalayas didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know.
Mm-hmm. Millions of years ago, this great city.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
first civilization.
Go figure. But yeah, and it's cool because, you can traverse these areas and there's kind of optional sort of tombs that you can check out for extra treasure and stuff like that. So, yeah, and it's really well done. It controls really well. The big thing in the game is you have like the kind of mountain climbing like picks, and there's a lot of timing involved trying to climb walls, like because a lot of it is in like ice caves and stuff like that. So, yeah. But it's good. It's funny because the one thing I do remember about this game is people were commenting on how graphically she dies in this game. And
it's always been one of the joys of this franchise. Like, even on the PlayStation 1, people just had fun kind of killing her in various ways. And it was always kind of an accompanying animation and scream.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that was pretty common in that era, because like Fear Effect, which I had to deal with recently, like was known for its gratuitous death scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Resident Evil had a bunch of them. Like it was just something that we can do this now, so goddammit, we're gonna do it.
Yeah, and I mean, like the first time you encounter a spike trap, of course you screw it up and fall into the spikes, and it very graphically shows her getting impaled on the spikes, and it's like right up, like right close to the camera. It's not like something where the camera's far away and you just see her kind of like fall into a hole. It's like, no, the camera actually moves down into the hole.
Let me give you a close up.
Yeah, I guess you a close up of her getting impaled. And then when you fight the bear, if the bear kills you, it shows the bear basically like chewing on her with blood spurting out, and then the bear like grabs her head and starts like tugging at her head. I'm like, is that really necessary?
So it's got fatalities and animalities.
Yeah, it's just Mortal Kombat.
I want babalities is what I want, but hopefully that comes down the line.
Friendship.
Yeah.
Anyone who's younger than like 23 is deeply confused right now.
Yes, all Mortal Kombat references, but But yeah, so now
I don't know, maybe the new current Mortal Kombat's have babalities. I doubt it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's but yeah, I mean, I'm impressed by it so far. I mean, I've been kind of waiting for it to kind of start sucking or be really or start being really average, and really it's actually quite cool. It's has a lot of depth. The crafting adds a lot to it. At first I was kind of wary of it, like, okay, is this just going to be some, you know, some kind of like overhead sort of thing that doesn't really add to the game. They just threw it on just to have something else, you know, something else to do rather than going through. But the focus is, you know, and I have a feeling that there may be more focus on gunplay later on, because you can, you know, craft guns and upgrade your guns and stuff like that. So I'm sure that comes into play. But at least in the first part of the game, there's really not a whole lot of, there's not a whole lot of gunplay. I mean, you start off with bow and arrow, so obviously there's no gunplay. I haven't even gotten to that point yet. But the focus is more on stealth and taking enemies out with stealth than anything else, which is nice. So, yeah. So Rise of Tomb Raider, gives a thumbs up for me.
So the secret city that her father knew about is full of enemies?
Not so far. The whole plot goes around, at least the start of it, is about kind of what you're tracking down. It has to do with this cult, of course, this centuries-old cult that is trying to get the secret to eternal life, and that is what Lara Croft's father has supposedly found. And so she is trying to head off. Like, stop me if you've, like, heard this story about 20 times before.
But he died.
So she's trying to head off this cult to get to this thing that is supposedly gives the secret, gives eternal life, right?
Oh.
Which is like, I swear to God, man, this is like every Uncharted-style game ever. It's like,
I mean, it's just Indiana Jones.
That's exactly it. And I mean, that's why I'm kind of like, yeah, okay, I get it. There's these bad guys. We're both going after the same relic, right? You got to get there before them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yep. And this is where somebody betrays you. This is where you get taken hostage.
The beats, you know, are well known.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for it. You know, I'm kind of waiting for it. But so
if a civilization had the secret to eternal life, how could they fall into the end times?
This exactly. That's the secret. That's what you got to find out, James. Oh, that's the hook.
Oh, I have to play the game now, John.
That's why you play, James.
God damn it.
Yeah. So. I am really enjoying this game, despite how completely jaded and cynical I am. So, there you go. I don't know if that's a rousing endorsement, but it's some sort of an endorsement. Probably the best you're going to ever get from me.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could play bingo, and that might get rid of your jadedness.
Not happening.
Be excited by Lara Croft, and all people.
Amen.
Guillaume, you had a review copy.
I did. I took on a review of the game Kona, and then later on I thought maybe I should recuse myself because this game is just too close to home.
Did you know beforehand?
Well, I saw that it was this is a game set in Northern Canada, which to me means like, okay, somewhere in Ontario. Certainly not here in Quebec. Quebec is Quebec. Canada is something else.
Spoken like a true separatist, Guillaume.
Distinct society, Guillaume.
Yeah, we're a distinct people. But yeah, so it's set in northern Quebec, and anyway, it was kind of cool. It's not as, you know, a fantastic game, but I enjoyed seeing 70s, even though I've never been. I wasn't there for the 70s, but no. You know, 70s Quebec, northern Quebec being represented, because, you know, like my dad grew up, part of his childhood was spent in kind of a logging camp, that my granddad had bought. And so, and then later on, my dad converted that into his cottage, basically his, hunting lodge. So I spent a lot of time in, you know, northern-ish Quebec, you know, in the woods, and like where you would see like encampments with various like old posters and old, you know, cans of products that don't exist anymore, or, you know, anyway, so it was
Courier
kind of
Dubois,
funny to,
stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was kind of funny to see like this, this game kind of reproduced like old Rice Krispies boxes, but non-infringing Rice Krispies boxes. So they would change like the you know, the name a little bit, so to make it a parody. But it's like, it was fun to see like all these things in the game that I can recognize, and I don't know, I got a kick out of that. But more about the game itself. It's a game made by a small development team who, you know, I think that they were mostly kind of doing work for hire, you know, like a small studio just creating games for publishers, like on specs or whatever.
Are they
however that goes?
Are they from the Quebec area?
They are from Quebec, yeah. Okay. Like, I mean, there are a lot of game developers in Quebec, yeah. Thanks to juicy tax credits.
There you go. Whee!
Yeah, something that Ubisoft found out or maybe created, lobbied for, and then now freaking Eidos or Square, rather, and EA and everyone is has offices here. But anyway, this
is for the
a
good
smaller...
of the people, Guillaume.
Yeah, well,
it's revenue positive, plot
yep.
honest.
So yeah, a smaller development team, and they decided to throw a Kickstarter for their game, and it's a game that they kind of wrote in French first. So it seems I haven't looked at this Kickstarter, but probably it was very much aimed first and foremost for gamers from Quebec, and then localized for the English market. It's kind of a their goal was to make, basically they were inspired by what is usually pejoratively called walking simulators, but they were like, well, we also want to do a little bit more than that. We like video gamey games, and so they decided to kind of try to inject more puzzles and more combat. So basically, what you get is an adventure game. Like I can see the kind of the origins as a walking simulation, because you do a lot of walking, but you can also get into your chevrolet, not your Chevrolet, and
oh,
you kind of, yeah, I know, go from encampment to encampment and just, you know, investigate what's been going on. The story is that you're Carl Faubert, this, you know, investigator from Montreal, a Korean War veteran, but now turned private investigator, and this rich industrialist, William Hamilton, has hired you to investigate this vandalism that's been happening on his property in northern Quebec, where basically he's bought a whole freaking town. You know, like he's bought a mine, and he's bought like all the whatever, like resource, natural resources, the logging camp or whatever, the general store and everything. But that has displeased the whoever was there already, the local residents. And so he's had to deal with vandalism. So you're driving up there. On your way there, you can see like some fun brochures about like touristic brochures for the region, but also like a lot of stuff that I kind of half remember from my history classes. You know, like in that era, Quebec was kind of experiencing a boom economically, because we, like the government basically decided like we're going to tap like our resources up north, like we're going to develop the hydroelectric potential, we're going to sell so much paper, like our natural resources are going to finance like all these social projects that we have. And so like you can get a taste of that in like the various brochures that you see. And
does this game actually get into like real events? Does it deal with things like the FLQ and
yeah, well, it does use that as a backdrop, and it's not required that you know anything about this history. It's just kind of there. I'm not sure, you know, like I know what these, you know, whatever, like, diaries are referencing, or like when they talk about, when they hint at, or they reference the Front de Libération, du Québec, I know what they're talking about. I don't know if it's required knowledge. I'm not sure if the game provides enough context for English, players or for people outside of Canada.
I mean, but something like them, at least the name is pretty much a giveaway of what they are. If you can't guess,
right,
they're a far-left Marxist military, paramilitary organization that was pursuing,
yeah,
Quebec independence.
Yeah, and they with violence, right? And
yeah,
they
yes.
Were, yeah, they were putting bombs in mailboxes.
The stock exchange or something like that,
yeah,
right?
And the game is, The game's actually set in October 1970, so far from Montreal. But at that time in Montreal, there was like a kidnapping.
Oh, that was right after the police strike too.
Yeah, well, basically the War Measures Act was declared, and people, I don't know, it was a mess. You don't need to know all of
Quebec
this.
Was rough.
The game mostly, let's get back to the game because we're never going to get out of this. But mostly, like, you arrive finally at this little town, and a car coming from the other directions runs you off the road, and you lose consciousness. And when you wake up, the weather forecast said that it was going to be like 52, but you're inside a freaking blizzard, and you gotta find shelter fast. So you go to the nearest cabin, and thankfully there are just like tire chains lying there, so you pick them up. You don't find a new code, unfortunately, so that means that you can't stay very long outside. You have to pay attention to how long you stay outside, otherwise you're going to die from exposure.
That would be bad.
But yeah, so you install the chains, you go check out like this other car that also crashed. The occupants have fled. You pick up a metal box in there and a picture, and you have no idea who they were. But then you go on to the general store, and what was his name? William Hamilton is there, dead from a gunshot wound. And that's where the game kind of loses the plot a little bit, because the game tries to mix, like, I find that the world building was really good. I really enjoyed reading the reading material in game, the brochures, the diaries, the stuff like that. And for the most part, it did not strike me as poorly written. I thought it had a lot of very similitude, you know. I don't know if a different person wrote them, but they really managed to build a convincing world to me. But then the game tries to tell a story by having this narrator, omniscient narrator, always narrating the action, narrating, you know, like some of Carl's thoughts, but also commenting on what's going on. And there's a lot of jokes that aren't jokes, you know, like there's a lot of, he says a lot of things that aren't witty or clever or appropriate even, and it just... it's weird, and it's like they tried to diffuse the kind of the tense atmosphere of the game with humor, but it's almost as if they don't even know what humor is, you know? I don't know. Like, you get out of your car for the first time, like, in this blizzard, you should be panicked, but the narrator is like, oh, Carl did not is not slowed down by scratches. His mom would be really proud. And it's like, it's not even corny. I don't know what it is, but it doesn't make sense in context. Why would you say something like that?
It's completely out of place.
Yeah, and then like you make your way to the general store, and there's a gas station there, and this is bad writing. So unfortunately, that's really unfortunate. And I think they got some complaints from the backers or the people who played it on PC, and so they included in the game a slider where you can turn down a little bit the narration, but it doesn't get rid of it completely. You just get like the important stuff. But
I want to hear less of your writing.
Yeah, but the important narration is still badly written, so it doesn't solve the problem. I don't think it's a translation problem either. I mentioned that it was, you know, written in French, then translocalized into English. It can't have been better in French. I did not try it, you know, but I yeah, these are not translation issues.
I would be curious to see, though, if you thought it sounded more authentic or better in French. Is there a reason you chose to play it in English?
Oh, just for the review, because that's what most people are going to play it with. I guess you could choose, you know, for more, to get more into the game, to have the French narration and the English subtitles. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't try that. But overall, like I still really enjoyed exploring the town, and it took me a while, but eventually you do get a better coat, so you can explore for longer outside, and I really enjoyed that aspect. And towards the end of the game, you get kind of a different vehicle. I guess I won't spoil it, but I really enjoyed playing around with that. And yeah, like also initially, the first few puzzles really impressed me by how they, without guiding you too much, manage to be solvable despite the openness of the game, because you can go anywhere pretty much at almost any time outside of the fact that the cold will kill you. But I mean, like, you can hop into your truck and then you can travel long distances, and still the game kind of signals you where you should go next pretty effectively. So I don't know, I really enjoyed the early part of the game, the exploration, and eventually it kind of got a little bit more tiresome with the narration, and also I got lost a little bit as the game went on. But I don't know, it was good, but I would recommend it if you are looking for that kind of walking simulator experience and you want that on Switch.
What if you're in the FLQ?
What if you're actively in the FLQ or going to depths on a regular basis?
Yeah.
I don't think they're really active anymore.
I would imagine there's probably some old people, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. But
The government was pretty thorough.
These things tend to stick around. I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Somebody's holding a grudge out there in the northern wilds of Quebec.
Spoken like a
you.
True Anglophone, John. God. You fucking condescending Anglophones.
Well, we certainly have a lot of those. But
Quebec, 1970. Those were the days.
This is your fault, John Lindemann.
Anyway, we've talked about it enough, but go read my review and see if there's anything, you know, but it's an interesting game. It's a little bit rough, and yeah, you kind of have to meet it halfway, I suppose. On
like most Quebecers.
God. You know, this episode is quickly threatening from being titled Get Excited by Everyone to some transliteration of the history of Quebec as presented by John Lindemann.
I'm going to
actively slice.
No, I'm going to declare sovereignty and just make my own podcast.
John is responsible for the new FLQ.
I'm going to secede from Radio for Nintendo.
Oh, man. Without even a referendum, Guillaume.
Yes,
come on.
No.
This is not
there
democracy.
There will be no referendums on this podcast.
This is not democracy.
Most of this podcast has had bad runs with referendums. We are moving on. I've been playing Yakuza 5. I'm still playing it. Right now I'm playing a baseball guy involved in scandals related to game fixing. This series is fucking weird. And one of the main protagonists of the series is in disguise, which means he's wearing a cowboy hat, sunglasses, and one of those masks Japanese people wear when he's sick, and is wandering around trying to be undercover. This is a stupid video game. I am through the entire section where you play as a pop idol, which just means all your battles are rhythm games, because they're dance-offs. So you're just walking around Osaka challenging people to dance-offs, which are just rhythm games. That's actually worked remarkably well on the PS Now service. Actually, when I talked about it, people were like, oh, part 3 is going to be terrible. But no, the reason Taiko is hard is because the windows are really small in the Taiko Drum Master games, and that in Yakuza 5, they just straight up ported the code for Taiko Drum Master into the game. Like, so that's why it's hard. The windows are super tight. Everything else has been fine, except for the karaoke song Machine Gun Kiss, which is a real thing in the Yakuza franchise, and it's been in like 5 games at this point. You should Google it. It's spectacular. But yeah, not much else to say. This is a Yakuza game. It's being stupid in the ways that I appreciate for the series. And I'm going to go hard-boil Crackdown on some baseball gambling. So that's where I'm at. Not much else to say. But after this, I'm going to dive into the PS Now back catalog, which I did before the show. And oh my God, there are some things in there.
Now, what about Yakuza 6, James?
So that's why I'm playing 5.
Okay.
I've played 4. I've played 0. I've played 1. 2 is being remade right now.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't played 3. So I wanted 6 picks up from 5, which picks up from 4. So I'm using 6 to catch up. 4 actually has like 2 hours of videos at the very start that you can choose to watch to recap 1, 2, and 3.
That's pretty great.
5 does not have that. 6 does not have that. So if you want to get in, 0 is the best place. But if you want to jump in towards the end of the series, 4 is the only one that's like, okay, I'm going to meet you halfway here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm running through. I watched those when I played 4, and it literally is like an hour and 50 minutes. It's longish. It's really long. And a lot of them are PS2 cutscenes on a PS3. So it's just taking up like 1/5 of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's great.
It's probably all artifacted and shit, right?
Oh, yeah. So good.
Yep.
But I'm almost through 5, which means I'll be caught up. So when 6 just picks up right from there, I'll be good to go. And that's the only reason I'm even bothering with 5.
Yeah.
Because it's not regarded as one of the stronger entries in the series. But here we are. We're going to get through it. I've already hunted a bear, so we're done with that, since apparently hunting a bear is a topic of conversation.
It's what the cool kids are doing.
I was up in the mountains of Japan in a hunting lodge. So again, I'm tying these games back together.
I hunted
a bear.
It works for me.
There we go. And it was very graphic. But he also survived many gunshots, as things tend to do in the Yakuza series.
Yeah.
Well, no, it depends. If it's a full motion video gunshot, they're going to die. But if it's an in-game gunshot, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
It could be from the exact same gun, but once that rendered video starts, that gun becomes way more lethal.
And if it's a golden shotgun, they spit out tons of cash.
Spit out cash.
Yeah.
Yes. To be fair, though, oftentimes they'll die in the cutscene and then come back later.
Nice.
They just fucking do. I've seen more characters die and then just be there later in the game than I care to even mention. But that's what I have to say about Yakuza 5. It's a Yakuza game. This series is great. It still strikes the... Zero is really the... I mean, these games have always been silly, and they know they're being silly. Zero is really where they lean into it, and then Kiwami picks up from there. I'm sure Kiwami 2 is the same way. The Yakuza 6 reviews have come out. It sounds like, because this is an all-new engine, this is the first PS4 native game, and just because probably what they're trying to do, this is the end of the Kiryu arc. And this game feels like it's much more focused on its story than on all of the stuff that by Yakuza 0 rolls around. They've just inundated the game with things to do that aren't the game. It sounds like this has probably been dialed back a lot because they had to recreate the game from scratch. Because these games reuse a lot of the same sets and assets and character models and everything. Game after game after game. I swear to God, I have seen this exact same office in 5 distinct games, and they're not calling it the same place. They're just reusing the office and putting different shit in it. But it's the same room. I know it's the same room. You can't tell me it's not the same room. Series is great. Greg.
Yep.
You got a kickstart on the old Wii Shop channel death.
Yeah, it's coming. It won't be long, about a week away by the time this episode goes out. Just with terms of what I've been playing in general, plenty of portable Bayonetta. I didn't redeem my download code for the first one from my retail copy until they put the new system in place for gold points. So,
Smart, few extra
pennies there, eh? Clever, but
I did actually use gold coin credit against Versus Super Mario Brothers.
And did it pay for 1% of your Versus Super Mario Brothers?
I had 272 points, so it equaled $2.72.
Oh, okay, good for you.
Yeah, I guess.
I got Eleanor from the library, so I got 65 gold coins. It's like they're paying me to take these from the
virus. That's gold coins.
That's a game cents. System right there.
That was the public's gold coins.
Yep.
Because before the whole thing got uprated, didn't it? Like before, you didn't earn nearly that many.
Yeah. Right.
Like no, I think you got 12.
Yeah. So obviously it's like 5% back from digital stuff, 1% back from the retail cards. Mm. So it's not as generous as Digital Deluxe was, but it is more flexible in the sense that Digital Deluxe you had to get over a certain threshold and then you got a voucher, whereas with this you can just redeem any little increment, as John mentioned.
I've got 500. That's $5.
Yeah, so, you know, it's kind of baffling that it took this long, other than whether your very obvious impetus in that, you know, points were going to expire if they didn't give you a reason, to, you know, give you a way to use them soon. For people, you know, just bought a Switch and you know, they were told these gold points would do something one day, and then an entire year was going by and they hadn't done anything with them yet. So I guess they had to do something. But, you know, this is kind of a... not overly generous, but it's nice to have something to put it towards. I think, you know, clearly there was probably some thought about tying it into the launch of the paid online service that has now, you know, had to be postponed because they're not ready for that yet. So hopefully this will be the kind of baseline of the rewards that you can get with gold points, and then there'll be some sort of, you know, additional rewards you can get with gold points if you're a paid member or something. We'll see, but it's nice to have something back, because there's definitely a number of games that, you know, I'll probably be buying digitally in the future, and then, you know, the 5% back on that is not nothing, and like I said, you can use it any time. Especially be useful for the foreign stores. You know, if I'm buying off the US store, for instance, it might just help me, like, get to be able to afford a game rather than to have to buy, like, another block of credit off a third-party site, because, you know, you won't take the credit card or whatever. Then, you know, so it could have its uses. It's not, you know, mind-blowing, but... it's nice to have. And Bayonetta, you know, the first one, playing it again underscores, you know, the smart things they did in the second ones, like getting rid of insta-death QTEs if you fail them.
Yes.
And, that sort of stuff. You know, but it's still... yeah, very good in its own right, even though, like, very familiar if you've played the second one. But, you know, it's portable Bayonetta is a wonderful thing. It's pretty damn addictive, actually. We, you know, get it going through on higher difficulties, getting better scores and all that good stuff. But yeah, in terms of the Wii Shop channel preparing for the end, obviously we've focused on WiiWare, but, you know, we've had the call out there for virtual console games that, you know, maybe especially kind of vulnerable to this loss, in the sense that they're not as available elsewhere and stuff. We had someone, you know, write in about Ironclad for, you know, it's one of the relatively few Neo Geo games that has yet to show up through the arcade archives on Switch and whatnot. So I was kind of thought, you know, let's really kind of get down to it and look through the list, you know, North American and European stores, kind of see what are some of the things, you know, that most seem like it'd be most kind of sad for them to go, or, you know, would it be something I'd like to buy before, while I've still got the chance, all that kind of stuff. I kind of compiled a list from the different formats of games, some of which, you know, I do own, some of which I don't, but it might be of some interest. I was kind of looking initially for the Mega Drive or Genesis library to contribute a lot of these, but the fact of the matter is they are quite available. There's like 70 odd games on the Western virtual consoles of Mega Drive, Genesis, and, you know, so many of them are on, you know, Steam, and, you know, are in these collections. There's another collection coming. We had the whole thing, it's like, is it going to be on Switch or isn't it? But probably will be eventually, and it's on a bunch of other stuff. So Mega Drive is a little bit disappointing, actually, in terms of the stuff that it yielded. But there was a few things, and, you know, some of these we've mentioned on the show before. Musha, or Musha Aleste, as it was in Japan. That's a vertical shooter in the sort of Aleste series, but in America they just called it Musha as an acronym, and it's a giant, you know, because it's a giant mech or whatever. But that's a pretty cool shooter that, you know, I, as far as I can tell, is not that available elsewhere. Yeah.
It's tough as nails too. That's a tough, tough
game. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because you can find, like, reviews back in the day that complain that it's too easy.
God, that's a tough game.
I mean, I found it pretty hard.
Your ship is massive, and it's just
yeah. The hitbox thing is a bit interesting.
But what if it was bigger, John?
Oh, I don't know.
It's just, I think it's just at that time, you know, reviewers were probably inundated with just ridiculously hardcore shooters all the time, and they just kind of got inoculated to, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting, but it's a cool game, and one of the ones that's definitely less available out there. Pulse Man, we talked about quite a bit when that arrived as an import game, because it's Game Freak. They'd in their pre-Pokemon era, they made this sort of action platformer with this character that transforms into electricity, and it's kind of referenced by Rotom, I think, in the Pokemon in subsequent, you know, in the Pokemon series eventually, but that's pretty cool. And then another kind of angle I was looking at, because I always used to complain that the Virtual Console didn't get as many kind of Western games on it as it might have done, but the fact is Wii Virtual Console had many more Western games than, you know, than any Virtual Console since. You know, that was clearly, like, some people did go for it, and there has not been the same kind of support on Wii U or 3DS in general. So you've got some examples like a couple of Turrican games, Mega Turrican and Super Turrican from Factor 5.
There used to be Super Turrican 2.
Yeah, that
list,
got delisted as best as
did.
I can. As a number of Western stuff was delisted, and I mean, other things too. You know, R-Type 3 was on there, for instance, that got delisted. But Western things, perhaps they just made shorter term deals or whatever. And those seem to have been pretty apt for the entire Commodore 64 section got delisted.
Yep.
Some of this stuff is already gone. That's the fact of it. But so you got those two Turrican games, although Super Turrican sort of weirdly re-emerged as the flagship for the analog, like, Super NES console that just came out, the Super NT or whatever.
Yes.
It's like built in, it's preloaded onto it, and it's the director's cut version, which is basically the we've actually got a cartridge big enough for this version, basically, which apparently Factor 5 would have liked to have put out on Virtual Console, but Nintendo's policies at the time did not allow for it. A weird one. Splatterhouse 2. They had 2, but not 3, even though 3 is better thought of, sadly. But that was a Mega Drive exclusive. But I think the only other way that you're going to get that sort of emulation is if you buy that remake thing that, it was on 360 or whatever, you know, the modernized Splatterhouse, that had the classics on it as well, but that's not terribly available. I also looked at NES stuff, and a lot of that has kind of made it onto 3DS and Wii U and whatnot, but for Xanadu is an interesting choice that I don't think has. That is very Zelda 2-ish. And very brown.
Great music.
But yeah, great music. Interesting game. Obviously, if you like that style of game, there's a number of them on NES. Yeah, this is probably one of the better sort of exponents of that style for its day. And then there was the import game that I know Johnny liked a bit. I don't think, I'm not sure if any of the rest of us played it. I didn't. By a Miracle Bakut Upa, which is the Konami baby game in a very literal sense. It's a, you play as a baby.
It's a ton of fun.
That was a weird little import game, which I think reappeared on Japanese virtual consoles, 3DS and Wii U, but not elsewhere. It was an import game originally, probably didn't sell very much. Super Nintendo stuff, the big one really to lead off with for the Super Nintendo library that's going away, ActRaiser. That did not come back on Wii U, or new 3DS or anything like that. So that could be worth getting if you haven't got it digitally in some fashion. I actually have an original cartridge of that, but it's kind of sad that I couldn't have downloaded a 60Hz version of it in English, because I got the Japanese cartridge, so I've never actually played it in English. This Chrono Trigger, which there's the DS version, of course, but with all the sort of the bump lately and talk about how bad the mobile version is or whatever, like the Super Nintendo version is very well preserved. in the Virtual Console release. You know, the music is exactly the same. The localization is exactly the same as you would remember it from its original run. You know, so that could be a good pick to get before it goes away. Some more Western stuff, actually. You've got the LucasArts kind of connection here, because they did put some of their stuff on there. So Super Star Wars games. The original Super Star Wars re-emerged around about the time that Force Awakens came out, I think, on PS4 or whatever. But Empire and Jedi did not, I don't think. So if you're interested in those, you know, that you could still sort of nab them. And then also Zombies Ate My Neighbors and Ghoul Patrol, the top-down games from that stable that are quite well thought of, are still there. They have not been delisted. Then you've got the Mylon sequel that apparently is a lot more enjoyable than Mylon.
Nothing like Mylon.
Yeah. It's Do-Re-Mi Fantasy, which is an import game. It was not translated, but you know, it's perfectly playable.
Oh, no, I won't get the fine story of fucking Mylon's secret garbage.
Shut your mouth right now.
It's a more
traditional. I am the host of this show, John Lindemann.
It's a more traditional linear platformer. It's really cute.
Yeah.
It's just a great map that you can actually see like the progress that you're making on the world map. Like, let's say that you're climbing some logs falling off a waterfall or something. You're going to see those on the world map. I don't know why it stuck out for me.
You give you a sense of place kind of thing. It's kind of like with, you know, Castlevania, when you have that little like scroll map where it's like, oh, you know, I did go up this tower and then go up over that bridge and come
exactly.
out. It's something that not all games, a lot of games didn't do that. They were just like totally abstract and, you know, kind of crazy, but it's just something to just give it a bit more of a feel of place and
crutches,
kind of embeddedness.
Crutches, Greg, crutches.
The super. It's some other Western stuff that was a bit. Aero the Acrobat 1 and 2 are on there. Iguana developer would go on to make Turok games on N64. Japanese pick that didn't come to Wii U later on, Super Bonk. It's kind of a not that well known part of the Bonk series.
It's not the best one in the series either.
I've always heard that of the Super Nintendo game, Super Bonk 2 was the better of the two, but that didn't make it at all, even to the Wii Shop. Yeah. So
Bonk is one of those series where pretty much every time you mention it, someone goes, yeah, but that's not the best one in the series.
I suppose not everybody necessarily agrees on what the best one is. There's a lot of games in it, but certainly of the two Super Nintendo ones, there's pretty broad agreement from what I can tell that 2 was better, but we didn't get that because, again, that's how Konami likes to roll. Or Hudson, I don't know, would have been responsible at that point in time when those games were initially kind of selected for the Virtual Console. And lastly, N64 stuff, somewhat surprising in some ways, Super Smash Brothers. It never came to the Wii U Virtual Console. So its only sort of Virtual Console iteration is currently kind of under threat. We can only assume it's going to come back.
What the Super Smash Brothers for this year is. It's just an upport of that game.
It's just prettier N64 Smash Brothers.
No, it's not prettier. It just runs better.
Oh, okay. But
with Splatoon characters in 64 bits.
The logo was too round in the splitter in the Inkling's eye for that.
that's for the big reveal later.
And also Pokemon Puzzle League is another one that was kind of particular to that. That is Paneled Upon by another name, essentially. In fact, that particular version of Paneled Upon sort of came back on GameCube, but with the Paneled Upon presentation from the Super Famicom game in the puzzle collection alongside Yoshi's Cookie and Dr. Mario. This N60, the constituent game in that collection of puzzle games was essentially the same one as Pokemon Puzzle League, but just without the Pokemon trappings. But yeah, this didn't come back either for whatever reason. There's all sorts of weird, you know, kind of inconsistencies, you know, the way that, well, it did get you know, Pokemon Puzzle League. We didn't get Pokemon Puzzle League on Wii U, but we did get Pokemon Snap. So it's not like we didn't get any of the Pokemon spin-offs. You know, it's a bit odd why certain things did or didn't appear. But I thought I'd run through some of them. They're by no means comprehensive. If anybody's got any suggestions before the deadline, I'd certainly still be willing to hear them. But I thought, you know, it'd be useful to just run through all these things before they go, because it was a while ago now. You can forget, you know, what survived and what didn't and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, and just as a reminder, you can still add points. It's that up until I think it's the end of the near the end of the month. It's not actually the end of the month. But
you can still add points up to the 26th, and then you'll be able to download things for like a year after.
Right. So if you want to just load up, you can.
Yeah, and then basically defer your decision making for another day. you could do that.
But I'm planning on doing a bunch of WiiWare stuff next week and VC stuff and. Just kind of like Greg did, I'm going to go do a sampling and grab some stuff and walk.
Yeah, you could, like, obviously, I mean, the demos you'll be able to download for WiiWare, you know, you'll be able to download for a whole other year, but, you know, you'll have to put the credit on first if you decide to buy any of the games attached.
That would
to
be the
demos.
Worst. Like, this is the game I always wanted. Oh, no, I can never own it now. maybe you could find some WiiWare point card floating around on the internet. That'll probably work, I guess. Have they said?
I've not covered that contingency anywhere in my
because nobody probably has any of those damn things.
Yeah, is there still some left that haven't been redeemed? Would they still count?
I'm sure there maybe are.
Not. Oh, but, yeah, I'm sure, but would they still work after the deadline? You kind of doubt it.
Who knows? Maybe that'll be the only way to add Wii points for a year. Maybe they'll become hypervalued. Maybe they'll be Bitcoin.
On eBay, trading hands for Christ. It'd be
the new
currency.
The new blockchain is Wii point cards. Wii shop channel points.
Oh, boy. So that's why you can't find Wii U's anymore. They're all being used to mine Wii shop points. <They're>
all... Oh, God. What a nightmare. All right, well, that's going to do it for new business. I'm sad. I'm very sad. So we're going to come back and we're going to do some emails. We're going to get happier again because I'm going to meet people and I'm going to get excited. Stay tuned. We're back. It's time for listener mail. You can send your emails to RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com. And so, John, I would like you to read the first email.
Certainly. Jonathan writes, in all caps, "Hey guys, who do you hope is in the new Smash Brothers game? I need more websites and podcasts discussing this because a billion isn't enough." Is not what this email was about. Forget that. We're going the other direction. Remove three characters from Smash Wii U /3DS.
I'm going to go first.
Okay. It's a sense a little disconcerting amount of eagerness here.
Star Fox, Star Wolf, Falco. Done.
I think, to
Fuck
be fair,
y'all.
I don't know whether it's in the spirit of this to allow clones to be victims. You know, it's too easy.
No, they all need to go.
You know, it's...
Along with all the flat stages.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you got your bias against Fox, Fox only.
My bias for fun, yes.
Yeah, Final Destination, but no.
They
I mean,
even called it fucking for fun. No one can complain when I say
yeah,
that
it's
now.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. They did.
They canonically proved to be right. So you can't even write the email
but,
now
because
you're
wrong.
By
the same token, does that mean that you acknowledge that if you've got like a high win percentage in the other mode, you have achieved glory?
You've achieved glory in a fucking party game? Yeah, congratulations. But you can't even write the email. I could just point you to Mr. Sakurai and go, no, he agrees with me.
Yeah, that's fair. I said, you know, I was trying to think of like more individual character, because otherwise you just say, okay, I think we could do without Lucas and we could do without you know, another Lucina, you know, whatever, you know, like all these sorts of clones. Those are the easy ones.
Get rid of the Star Fox, add three more Fire Emblem swordsmen.
Yeah, I mean, Wolf wasn't in Wii U 3DS, for the record.
He wasn't. No.
It was just Falco, that way. But he's Brawl only, Wolf, as I recall.
If I could remove the Ice Climbers again, I would. I don't think that their fans have suffered enough.
So if you come up with one after that, you're good to go.
I don't really care enough.
This is an apathy email segment, Guillaume.
Well, you know, like I don't know. Like I guess the one of the many sword characters. Like Shulk doesn't really belong in Smash Brothers anymore. I don't think. Doesn't look like they're doing anything with him, unless.
What if you get to play as all of the Ardanian soldiers?
Oh, that's interesting.
That could just be an assist trophy.
Sure,
that would be a really good assist trophy. Just have a Skell from X that's like those characters, you know, like Tatsunoko versus Capcom, like the you know the or like the Sentinel from X-Men.
It's got
you know,
two
like
health bars.
You've always got to have one stupidly large character in those old Capcom versus games. So yeah, just do that with a Skell from X.
But if you're playing with stock, you get half the stocks.
Yeah, something like that. But obviously, Ridley's still too big. He can't.
No, right? Ridley's out.
I would say for me it would be I would say Villager, Meta Knight, and Olimar. They can all go. Get them out of here.
John hates short people.
Suck.
John hates short people. Canonical now.
I do.
That's offensive, John.
The one thing I would say is, even though I use him a lot, I kind of wish they'd get rid of the version of Ganondorf they've got, because I'd like to have a unique character. I've said it a number of times, you know.
Yeah.
Like just having it be a Falcon clone is kind of... I don't know, I guess you could make it a separate character, like Toon Ganondorf or something, with his Wind Waker version.
I think that's Toon Link.
I just want Xander Mobius to...
Toon Ganondorf. Yeah, this fits it easy. You have the dual blades from the battle at the end of Wind Waker, and his final smash is, for some reason, getting stabbed in the head. You know? But just something particular to him, you know, it just seems like he's been getting shortchanged just because of, you know, like that was the best way they had to accommodate him back in Melee, which was a pretty hectic development sort of schedule from everything you hear.
His final smash is just he screws up real bad and then the entire stage goes underwater.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, God, I forgot to actually touch it. Oh, what an idiot. Yeah. King of Red Lies just standing there going,
There we go again.
Yeah, so that's one clone, but I'll try and come up with two other like individual characters like John did. So let's see. Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, Villager, I'd probably say yes, even though I think they did some cool things with it. I can't really imagine them doing a better job of getting an Animal Crossing character in there, unless it's going to be an actual rather than your player character, like one of the crazy residents.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of went Mr. Game and Watch with him, too. It's just he does everything. He does all kinds of weird shit. That's kind of what his shtick was.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? He's kind of... Yeah, a little bit. I mean, they're not clones or anything, but they're almost a little bit redundant. Yeah, it's kind of the same shit. But I might throw Game & Watch in as well, even though, you know, he's been around for a while, just because I haven't got any kind of attachment to him.
If they were able to, like, go after other Game & Watch properties, but they've kind of done them, so it's a little bit tough. But at the same time, I would actually rather go after Rob than Game & Watch.
Yeah, it's pretty useless.
I don't know. It's not actually a video game character. I mean, you just fucking replace him with Amiibo. Just there.
Yeah.
And 80% of the time you try to pick the character, it won't let you pick it because they're sold out.
Wow.
See, things get dark on this show sometimes. And not when we're talking about separatist movements. Amiibo Liberation Front. We're going to tack that on the title list.
Should we give a character that we feel should be in Smash?
So you say that, and actually we have another email just after Jonathan. So viciously disparaged those, where Adolf asks, what's one ridiculous character from any video game, movie, or book you want to be playable in the next batch? His choice was the anthropomorphic Virtual Boy.
In the same vein, I want a Donkey Kong arcade cabinet to be playable in Smash.
The table or the upright?
The upright, I guess. Whatever. Both have been missing in action. The arcade version of Donkey Kong can't be found. So what if you could kind of play Donkey Kong on an arcade cabinet that's also playing Smash, that's beating up Nintendo characters?
Yeah, what about if it's Billy Mitchell, but he's not tournament legal because he's using MAME or whatever?
Oh, no.
Yeah, his Bayonetta's still fine, but Billy Mitchell cannot be used in a tournament.
Yeah.
John, I've got one I don't want to force you to follow. Do you have one?
I wouldn't mind seeing one of the Choaniki guys in there.
Oof. You know,
that'd be pretty cool.
I may have undersold you here, but I think I've still got it, which is just a playable Love Hotel. it just meanders around the stage.
Yeah.
Bringing joy and happiness wherever you have enough money to pay for an hour's worth of time.
Yep.
And hope that your wife doesn't see you go in.
Mm-hmm. But then again, you know, one of the super attacks is that a smash could be your wife does see you, but she doesn't say anything. She just
That's
never mentions
the worst
it.
Thing we've said yet this episode.
One of the stages could have a mirror on the ceiling.
Yep. Well, that would be part of the smash.
And just a bed mysteriously sitting in the middle of the stage.
Yeah, the smash could be, you know, a room, mirror on the ceiling, and your wife comes in. Your wife opens up the door, sees you with the hostess, and then just closes the door.
And it'd be like that old Pokemon stage where, was it like Palkia shows up and flips it upside down, but instead it just makes you play in the reflection.
I was thinking more of the, is it a Game & Wario? What's it called?
Oh, yeah. The
WarioWare stage with the mom. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's great. The gamer stage.
Just reset that as a Love Hotel.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's like, unhappy marriage is somehow the darkest thing we've done this episode. Infidelity and all kinds. Oh, man. Oh, well,
the best is they finally bury the hatchet and just pay up to get Tyson in the game.
I mean, he sold his likeness to an Adult Swim show. It can't be that expensive.
Yeah, it's more that they wouldn't ever do it. It's the ridiculous part. But, you know, we need more. I say you need more of the opponents from, you know, the baddies or the antagonists from game rather than just, you know, the main character. And that's who you remember from Punch-Out, the guy whose name is on the box.
What if Donkey Kong is turned into Donkey Kong from Punch-Out and then he's just not unbeatable? There you go. It's just an instant win button. All right, well, let's move on to our next email. That would be Guillaume. Would you please read Brian's email?
Yeah, Brian writes, "You're a couple of cool-headed Nintendo fans." He doesn't mention which ones.
A couple of couples, maybe?
I don't know.
No, I think he's saying that two of us aren't cool-headed. I don't know who the fuck he's talking about, but I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Which is what makes your podcast so relatable?
We shouldn't have read this episode.
What's up with all these Switch loyalists demanding the 3DS be put to death? Especially after the most recent Direct. In the Wii U era, I might have been a tad bitter about the Luigi's Mansion remake on 3DS because I wanted something for my Wii U instead of another 3DS game. I've admittedly neglected my 3DS only because I don't have the time and especially money to support both it and my Switch, but now I finally have a reason to dust off the 3DS. And goddammit, I did not wait more than 7 years for a 3DS WarioWare game only to tell Nintendo no thank you. Also, I admittedly get entertainment from seeing the Switch loyalists cry." Wow. So basically, Brian is a fan of the 3DS out of spite.
Yeah
I mean,
that's sweet Schadenfreude, isn't it? It's a powerful thing.
Yeah, we're in a dire straits in the email this week. So I mean, I get people just want to get away from the 3DS, the argument being that it's just technologically inferior in so many ways.
Well, yeah, people have been unhappy with the 3DS resolution in particular ever since iPhones have been around, which has been since the 3DS has been around. Yeah, so I understand that aspect. But personally, I'm one of those people who hasn't really taken to the portability of the Switch. Like I see people in the subway like looking at their iPads, and I could never do that. Like I can't bring myself to bring electronics that expensive on the subway.
That big too. Like those things are just big.
Yeah, it doesn't exactly fit in your pocket. So the 3DS still has a use for me. It's still the portable.
So the question that there's two phrases. One of them is, do you want to just kill the 3DS, which would be incredibly stupid. And if you have any concept of business and you say that, you're an idiot, because they sold 1 billion of these damn things, and they're still selling.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that, you know, obviously you could talk about 70 million in year, or more than 70 million units out there worldwide, and say, oh, well, you know, that's loads, and like, why aren't they doing even more stuff with it? Well, of course, however many of those are actually kind of active, if you will, at this point is much less, I'm sure.
Yeah, I've
but
got
the
two
fact
in my
is
house
that
and one's
recent sales,
active.
Recent sales, especially, you know, the strong kind of Pokemon-led year, the year of you know, the original Sun and Moon, you have kind of shown that there is still a software purchasing aspect. You know, that it's not just about the fact that they have expanded that user base, or they've sold more systems or whatever, but that the people are still buying software, that maybe they can still get kind of upticks in software sales when something else, you know, Pokemon, you know, kind of re-entered the public consciousness, that's probably overstating it, but, you know, got hugely boosted in the public consciousness with Pokemon Go, and then that, you know, 3DS experience, so they probably might envision similar things happen with other franchises or whatever. So, you know, it's not as if, you know, you just look at the 70 million number and say, well, that's way bigger than, so it'll take Switch years to get there, you know, like, but it, the fact is, you know, it's shown that it can, you know, sustain a certain kind of level of revenue generation, so, you know, they're happy to kind of cater to it, but as I said, not with their sort of premium resources. That's the thing. I mean, I don't really, I would imagine the principle, I mean, there's two strands to it. There's the kind of personal strand of just like, I want to deal with one device, it's more convenient, you know, I want everything on this thing, I like it better, it's easier if everything I want to play is, you know, hosted in one place. And then it's the other thing, I guess, which is the feeling of opportunity cost, of that, you know, Nintendo diverting its resources and attention to 3DS diminishes what's coming out on Switch. But I kind of feel like that second reason is the weaker, because, as I've said last week and before, you know, they're not dedicated premium resources to that console anymore. No. So I don't feel like it's, you know, really kind of, yeah, you could say, you know, Luigi's Mansion could be on Switch, but it's a fundamentally different project that point in terms of like a remake is be a lot more demanding.
And a remake, you know, like the 3DS already had the Luigi's Mansion game, so they're probably reusing assets, they're probably reusing an engine. Like there's significantly, there's significantly less work required.
To say that. Those development resources were sort of like fungible into like a Switch game.
The Wario game is a compilation, kind of, you know.
Yeah, and then Mario Luigi, they're getting more mileage out of that lovely sprite work again, you know, that for that was specifically for that resolution and all that. Like, you know, the first reason I get. The second reason, I don't know how much that sentiment's out there. To the extent that it is, I kind of feel like it's probably a bit overstated.
Yeah, I mean, the thing to keep in mind is that the games that they announced that were truly new games for 3DS, one of them, which they had announced in the past, Sushi Striker, whatever.
Way of the Sushido.
Yes, as I almost called it Sushi Striker Gun Vault, which would have been funny, but not accurate. it is now a Switch game as well.
Right.
But that's a new game where they're creating new assets from whole cloth. And so in that case, you know, the cost is the cost. They have to make new assets anyway. I would love to have seen, you know, what a some of these games would look like on Switch, but they're also being fundamentally built as 3DS games. So WarioWare is a great example. Like, it's using features that the Switch might not have. It's using the microphone and stuff. Like, you're just going to cut those games out? Just excise them for the Switch version? Or are you going to excise them from the 3DS versions because you don't have a, have it on the Switch? Well, the answer is...
I mean, what I'd hope for as well with the Switch WarioWare is that they would... I mean, a compilation would be nice, and you know, they'd put some smooth move stuff in there, or whatever, and then maybe cut some other things out. I mean, that wouldn't be objectionable by any means, but it would be nice for them to actually do something that was more completely fresh and actually had Switch specific.
Make a new one.
WarioWare is one of the only sort of things I can think of that could make like a really legitimate use out of the HD Rumble that would work. Probably, you know, that feel like it was added something to the game, but you know, So you'd hope it'd be so. Personally, I would hope for something like that for WarioWare on Switch. Whereas you know this compilation kind of you know, sort of format for 3DS seems just about right. And I mean, we haven't had one before. That's right. The crazy thing about it. In all the, you know, as long as it's been, as Brian points out. So yeah, I'm really happy that 3DS is going to at least have, you know, even if kind of like what I said about Zelda. You know, it never did get a Zelda all of its own. You know, and it's not going to have a WarioWare all of its own, but it's still going to be, you know, something that I think will fit really well with what Guillaume's going to was talked about in terms of a true portable. I think it's perfect for that.
Well, and to one other point, there, you know, I would assume Next Level's at least involved in this, the 3DS port of Luigi's Mansion.
Sure.
Which is probably like the highest tier development studio they've got working on some of this stuff, at least the most internally, even though they're not internal. But the reality of the situation is right now the 3DS is making money on its back catalog, and they need
that's mostly how they envision it continuing to make money.
They've said that outright. Yeah. But the thing is, in order to keep the backlog on shelves, they still have to give retailers new product.
Mm. Yeah.
If you're not releasing games for it, retailers aren't going to want to put it on their shelves, even if it's not those aren't the biggest sellers. So just to keep it in mind share, they have to keep putting stuff out there. They have to keep talking about the 3DS.
Right, because as soon as there's a whiff of the 3DS being a dead platform, it becomes a lot less
attractive.
Attractive, yeah, for potential customers.
Right. Shelf space is limited, and especially on 3DS. Switch is probably, I mean, this has been a growing trend in games, you know, in terms of percentage of them that are sold digitally versus retail. But I would imagine Switch, or 3DS, is probably more biased towards retail sales than Switch, for example.
Yeah, and I mean, really, retail is kind of moving towards like, hey, try out this console and try out these games and see what you like and, you know, buy them however you want. The 3DS really doesn't lend itself to that. I mean, it's not as engaging a retail experience. You don't really typically go to Best Buy to play a 3DS. That's kind of,
but if the game is selling, if games sell retail for that platform in a higher percentage than they do for other platforms, keeping the retailers happy and keeping the systems on the shelf are of incredible and crucial importance.
Yes, yeah, if you want it to be viable, then, you know, that's what you got to do. Obviously, they haven't always taken that approach. You think about how they treated GBA.
Right.
When, they was very much the case. They had, you know, wholly original games ready to go if they wanted them in the West and just moved to kill it. Right. You know, they really did kill the GBA, you know, as swiftly as they could. But, you know, it is a very different situation. I mean, 3DS, you know, with the price point is so much lower than Switch that there's more differentiation in terms of what kind of market it serves. And, yeah, in terms of the preference for retail, you know, box copies versus digital kind of factors into that.
Well, and they were also racing towards a future where they would be supporting three systems if the GBA held
on. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's also true. Yeah.
So they were probably not very eager to be in a place where they had to support three distinct systems, because that makes it really hard just to get your marketing message out. Now they're dealing with two. They're devoting the majority of their air to Switch, but they're talking about 3DS. They're putting product out there. They're making sure it gets coverage. and in so doing are able to sort of continue to milk that back catalog as stuff comes out. And I mean, they saw there was a, when Animal Crossing came up, there was a bump for Animal Crossing sales. Like, this, these things have effect. These mobile games have had effect. Mario had an impact when it got its coverage. Like, there's real reason to keep that back catalog available and impulse shoppable, which is not something that usually happens in the digital space, because you have to actively go into them, especially in the 3DS's cavernous and terrible eShop. So, yeah, in terms of why these games don't come to Switch, it's just cost. And them being exclusive on 3DS probably does have some appeal to retailers, to be entirely honest, in a completely self-serving way. If that game is also on Switch, are they going to be that interested in, like, oh, well, you gave me a new 3DS game this month? Are they going to say, oh, you gave me a 3DS downport of something? I'm still going to start to take away space from your 3DS kiosks.
Yeah, exactly, because it seems like the system is going into maintenance mode.
Right. I mean, it is in maintenance mode. I mean, they're winding down services, like the remote street pass, or whatever they called that thing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. And no, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. It's going into that kind of, I'd say, kind of a low maintenance mode, you know, where it's like, okay, let's see, we'll do enough to kind of keep it going, and that's worth our while. And then, you know, if the figures shift to suggest it's not worth their while, even at that level of maintenance, then it gets switched off pretty quickly. Yeah, it's not exactly irrevocable stuff that we're dealing with here. As soon as they feel like it's not worth it, it's time, you know. Personally, from my point of view, you know, the fact that they will consider it worth keeping going, and that probably means that you'll get a few more games, like, from third parties out of Japan that might get localized as a result of that. That's a good thing, you know. Yeah. I'm happy with that. I don't see the downside, really.
And that's another point. It probably keeps publishers more willing to put out their back catalog of stuff, which means Nintendo gets that sweet, sweet revenue.
Although I've heard that the third parties are not really seeing that long tail in the 3DS as much as Nintendo is.
Those big catalog games. I think, I mean, it's neat stuff, but it may still be enough to justify some localizations of games. But again, if the
Atlas
figures aren't
obviously
think
so.
If the figures aren't where they need to be, then again, yeah, then it'll just, the plug gets pulled pretty quickly.
Yep. This will happen in time. I mean, Nintendo announced a 2019 3DS game, so
yeah, that was
this is the world we live in.
I did also kind of tell me probably there won't be like further announcements this year for 3DS stuff.
Yeah,
I gotta say, I'm pretty, like, I've been playing my 3DS every day on my commute, and I'm really happy with it still. There was a couple of years ago, games like Seventh Dragon kind of looked like garbage on the 3DS screen.
Just kind of looks like garbage.
Yeah, but there was something about it, about the assets, that did not agree with the resolution. But recently I started playing Ever Oasis, and that game looks nice. It looks way smoother than you would think the resolution of the 3DS would allow, and I'm not sure why. I think it's just they chose the right style for that screen.
I mean, they're experienced developers on that platform, and they picked they picked art style that would work with it.
And stuff like The Alliance Alive, which is coming out soon from Atlus, also looks pretty nice, although I'm not sure I'm a fan of the droopy anime eyelids of the characters, but
Furyu just does that. I don't know why.
It's weird, but it's a nice-looking game overall.
What model are you playing these on, Guillaume?
It's a new 3DS.
XL,
yeah. I mean, yeah, like, the bigger screen does not blow up blemishes or anything. Like, I mean, it looks good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still on the lookout for a new 3DS XL, like, it's really, I mean, I still have the OG red old 3DS, so that's probably why I don't play it very much.
You have not gotten a 2DS XL with a Pikachu nose sticking out? I'm surprised.
Tempting, but no.
You should get that.
The nose is actually sticking out. Like,
it's raised, yeah. That's what they do with it. You had the Pokeball that had an actual, like, button And then they had that Metal Slime one in Japan. That was kind of neat. So they might get some more cool ones before the end in the 2DS vein. But I like the 3D. That's another thing that is you know, kind of does keep me coming back. Kind of be happy to see the odd new thing if it did have 3D. Increasingly, they don't.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's pretty much been ditched. The Alliance Alive doesn't have it.
Yeah, that's it. So, you know, that I would be happy to see that. I'm assuming, you know, with some of these kind of remakes or, you know, like Captain Toad and, you know, Luigi's Mansion, it's kind of more incumbent on them to have 3D because, you know, it's like that's one thing that that version would have that others didn't have previously. So I'm hoping they do because, you know, I've been replaying through... Mario 3D Land, just because you know the levels are super quick. It's so perfect for portable play, you know. And I've got a new 3DS that's a smaller one, so it's like super portable, you know, relative to Switch, you know. And it's just convenient and fun, and I like the 3D effect. So you know, I mean, replaying stuff is still, you know, so I've got a number of things digitally installed on it and, you know, keep going back to them. But new stuff is welcome as far as I'm concerned.
So fun fact for you, Guillaume. So The Alliance Alive and The Legend of Legacy. Of course, Legend of Legacy is the game that came out in 2015. Alliance Alive is its follow-up. And you mentioned that Ever Oasis looks good. Grezzo did design help for Cattle Call, who made those games, for both of them.
Oh,
they assisted with the development of those games. So there's a connection. There you go. And of course, Furyu is involved in the publish of like a million 3DS games. So there's experienced hands working on all this stuff. There's your I wouldn't call it a fun fact, your actual fact of the day.
Actual fact is a more and more crucial distinction in these times.
It is. All right, so I have our final email. Dan from Canada writes, "Hey guys, what are the proudest gaming accomplishments in your personal gaming history? They do not necessarily have to be the hardest achievements, but something you may have seemed impossible to you initially, but you still managed to overcome the adversity. For me, it was beating Jabu Jabu in Ocarina of Time. Seems trivial now, but at the time I was 8, and it seemed so daunting to me that I was terrified of dying in that game for some reason. I also knew that if I beat it, I would get the boomerang, as well as the opportunity to become Adult Link, so beating it was a big deal in my 8-year-old brain. Another one I could think of is when I was older and getting all 242 stars in Super Mario Galaxy 2. That Grandmaster Galaxy is brutal but fair, unlike the final challenges in 3D World and Captain Toad, which were just marathons of pain. Thanks. And I love the show." Marathons of Pain, also a possible slogan for Radio Free Nintendo.
Yeah,
that's a good one. So, 3D World's final level is pretty damn good.
It is good. It's really good.
I never bothered to finish it.
I did finish it. It's fun.
I just did the 3D Land one, which is definitely not as marathon-y. But, you know, it's tricky, but not.
I think that everyone knows that there's a huge part towards the end of that last level that you can skip by standing on this one platform.
Yeah. But if you want to do it faster, you know, then you take the hard way.
I did not know that at the time.
I've got a time on the Mario 3D Land last level that's never been beaten by anyone I ever street passed with, which is about 6 people. So, you know, maybe that should be the proudest bit.
Best of 6.
A whole 6?
Yeah.
I don't know that it's my proudest. I was pretty proud of it in the time, which is when we did the retroactive on Ogre Battle, and I said I'm not going to use units that I've used before. I was going to basically play the game in a completely distinct way from how I'd ever played it, because my playthroughs had gotten really, really mechanical. Like I knew like this is 5 configurations of units that just work, and I know how to deploy them. I know how to use them in battle. I know what their strengths and weaknesses are, and I can just I can create them at a whim. I can create this formation without even thinking, and I know it's a tank and it'll just roll through the enemy. And there were 2 formations in particular that I expressly banned from my usage. And then I created like 7 or 8 new ones that I'd never even tried before. And I was successful. And I found it, like, I was proud of myself that I did it and I stuck to it. Because it would have been very easy to retreat into, like, all right, there's my 2-0-3 formation of paladins. By the way, that's an unbeatable formation in Ogre Battle. Can't be beaten. Can't do it. Game can't beat it. It's ridiculous. But I didn't do it. And I stuck away from it. I didn't use any of the weird bullshit things that I know exist in that game that just break it wide open. I played the game like I was new at it and came up with new strategies. And when and if I go back and play that game, and I gave that in the right order, when and if, I am going to be dramatically better equipped to beat the ever-loving shit out of that game as a consequence of what I learned. And break it. And like, I was excited after beating it that time because my experience gave me like 7 or 8 new things to try to just smash that game wide open. But it was work. Like it was the hardest playthrough of that game I've had since the first time I played it.
So it's self-restraint that made you proud.
Yeah. Like, I wasn't sure you could do it. I wasn't sure you could build these weird units and still beat the game effectively. And I did. And it took a lot of trips to the witch's den to revive characters when I was trying to find new formations. But I did it, and I was happy about it. And at the end of the game, I was still an all-destroying conqueror.
Well, I do really love to crush 8 years old at Mario Kart. I don't know if it's my proudest accomplishment.
So you're really proud of the controller down and say, what? It doesn't
just
count.
Makes me feel like a big man, you know?
You're most proud of the absence of self-restraint.
Well, I mean, you'd better be a big man or John won't like you, apparently, so.
I don't want to stoke the fires of discontent here, James. There's been enough bloodshed on this podcast.
That's probably true.
I guess one of the... I don't know. My proudest gaming accomplishment might be unlocking the AX tracks in F-Zero GX
back in
the day. But I had a lot more free time, I feel, back in those days.
I'm not proud of it at all. I'm probably ashamed more than anything, but doing the fucking story mode on every difficulty.
Oh, God. That's the thing, though, right? Like, I remember on the IGN board, someone accused me of being elitist for kind of... I don't know, for saying that the unlocking the AX tracks was not that difficult in the end. But because, like, the story mode stuff, the unlocking the characters was freaking impossible.
Yeah, that was way harder as I remember.
Yeah, well, the story, the chapters, the 10 of them, like, they all had, like, rubber band AI or stuff like that. Whereas to unlock the tracks, the AX tracks, all you had to do was... finish like the toughest cups on the toughest difficulty, but it was feasible because there's no rubber banding.
It was definitely just fairer. Yeah.
So you could potentially, you know, just take out the person who was the closest to you in terms of points for one
race. That's true. It never felt as good to destroy stuff in GX to me as it did in X, but you could still do that, and that not so fair, but it worked.
Yeah. So anyway, I felt pretty good about that, but I did not unlock all the characters. Maybe one or two of the characters from the AX game, but
yeah,
it was pretty great. Great game. I would never play it again.
It's like for me, going back chronologically, I would say most recently probably beating Xenoblade Chronicles X. Not so much that I beat it, but in the span of time that I beat it in, I crammed that entire game, all 118 hours, into like a 27-day span that was just insane. I haven't chewed through a game like that in a long, long, long time.
Would you call that a marathon of pain, or?
No. I really enjoyed it. I mean, but it was just, I haven't played a game like of that length so intensely in such a small amount of time, and because I felt like that's how I know it was in 27 days, because I was like, holy crap, because I had all that time off during Christmas, And I just played that game just constantly. I would just get up in the morning and just play it all day. And I just burned through it. So, and I don't really do that with anything. Or even really attempt playing games of that scope anymore. So, that was a big one. Finally beating Chrono Trigger after having it on my pile of shame for years.
After being made fun of for months.
Well, not, yes. Yeah, because, you know, especially with Johnny hosting us, you know, it was a constant, like, prod.
Yep.
Of, yeah, you know, come on, you done it yet? You done it yet?
Yep. So that was huge to get that off of the pile of shame. And I would say kind of all time, just sort of like across all consoles, would be like Final Fantasy VII on the PS1. I had all of my characters just to God mode. I sat there and grinded all of them all up to like level 99. And then I went after like the hardest, all the monsters in the game, the weapons, ruby weapon, diamond weapon, whatever. And I could beat them all no problem, to the point where my characters were so good they couldn't even hit me. So that was a huge one too. That took me forever. That was just grinding. And then going way, way back, probably Pitfall for the Atari 2600. That was really one of the first popular games out there that actually had an ending to it. Most games around that time, this is like the early 80s, right? So most games were like Asteroids, where you would just play it forever or play it until you hit like a kill screen or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? And this was, Pitfall was actually one of the first games where you actually played it to an ending. So I remember taking like a screenshot. I still have that screenshot lying around here actually of like the actual like end of the game, which really is nothing. It's just the game just stops. Like you get to the last room. And there's like a little treasure there, and that's it. The game stops. But that was huge because that was like the first, really one of the first games that I actually beat. So, yeah.
You already talked about Xenoblade X, John.
That reminds me that I used to have a picture of myself giving the finger to the TV at the Adventure Island end screen.
Yeah.
Because I hate played that game.
I've heard Seren talk about this.
it's not a good game. And,
it's a foreign concept to me, this hate play.
I don't know why I did it. I don't know. Again, too much free time.
Yeah, I
had also played Wonder Boy, which was much better, but then Adventure Island just messes up the timing or something. Like, there was something, like, it was way dickier in its enemy placement. And, God, I hate that game.
Yeah, it was. I would say the same thing. I hate played GoldenEye on the hardest.
And oh, 00.
007, that difficulty was so. It was so hard. I mean, it took me ages.
It took me absolutely ages. Like, the things I wanted to see, because I think, wasn't it the Baron Samedi level or whatever was contingent on doing it on 00 age or doing the rest of the game.
Or you had to have a Game Shark when you just gave up on that shit, which is how I handled it.
I never used like a Game Shark. So yeah, I did see it eventually, but it was way after. Cause never been particularly good at FPS games. I like GoldenEye, and the thing is, you know, the 00 difficulty was kind of substantively different, you know, because you had more objectives and stuff. You know, it wasn't just like a health, you know, ammo kind of thing or something. But, God, it was tough for me anyway, because I was just rubbish at games at that time.
Yeah, there's a couple areas. There's the one area where it's a kill room and you're in, like, it's like this launch.
It's a Moonraker level, isn't it? Yeah, it's got the shuttle. Oh, God, yeah.
And that's brutal.
Which was the other secret level. That was like, you unlock that, I guess, if you did everything on Secret Agent. And then, you had to do that and everything else on 00 to get the Egyptian level or whatever it was with Baron Samedi, kind of just mashing together a bunch of. But it was like the Golden Gun. The place from Spy You Love Me and Baron Samedi from Live and Let Die all in one level, going off the rails.
Yeah, and then I remember the final fight against Trevelyan, where you're out on this like scaffolding, like I think it's like you're on the GoldenEye, whatever the GoldenEye satellite.
Yeah, the antenna, the satellite dish, or
that
whatever.
Is
yeah,
also just blisteringly difficult, like just controller shatteringly difficult. It was so awful. And when
for
I finally
England,
beat that,
James.
That was huge. Yeah.
No.
yes.
I mean, that kind of goes down to my hide in the closet game against nothing but Dark Sims and Perfect Dark.
Oh no!
I set it myself as a team against an entire full repertoire of Dark Sims.
Yeah.
And it was basically like, how long can I survive? And the answer was like 2 minutes of just hiding,
mm-hmm.
and just mining the hallway. But once I ran out of mines, that was the end of that. They roll down the hallway like the friggin' Attila the Hun and just wrecked everything. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But I did it. It was 2 minutes. Also, the N64 couldn't handle doing all of those.
That's true. Yeah. I've struggled to do things, things that were tough for me. Don't generally feel very proud afterwards. There's relieved is probably usually the word.
Yep.
There's this sort of relief that I won't have this sort of itch that I feel after scratch anymore, mm-hmm. But enjoyable, but not a cause for pride. So my best answer is probably similar to Dan's, really, because I was a small child at the time. I was probably about four years old, actually, so a fair bit younger. It's Castlevania, beating Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a tough game.
It is for 4-year-old, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, my brother had done it. I'd seen him do it. So it was like, it's doable. You should be able to do it too. And I just died and died and died and died and died. And, mm-hmm. It's Dracula. So it's like, well, of course he's, he's a fucking Prince of Darkness. Of course he's ridiculously hard. I got there eventually. And for a brief moment, I felt very proud of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Well, that is going to do it for email. You can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And in fact, that is going to do it for the show. Greg, do we have any recommendations this week?
Well, we did have an email from Mark who wanted to suggest Blaster Master Overdrive, resubmit for everyone's attention Blaster Master Overdrive on WiiWare. It was on our poll. When we did the one last year, it lost out or was robbed in Mark's estimation by Llama Lana and certain voting patterns in that. But, that's another one of those
voting irregularities.
Another one of those unique WiiWare games be going away when the shop is, inaccessible. But we spoke about it a fair bit. Where contemporaneously, when Johnny and John both had it back then, because Johnny was very fond of Blaster Master. It was the original is like his farewell episode, wasn't it? The retroactive.
Yep.
I have not got round to that. So that's another one that's in the that's certainly in my thinking as well. So it's nice to give that another kind of. In terms of music, we've got a request in from TJ. He wanted some music from the original Lufia game on the Super Nintendo, The Fortress of Doom, a track that actually is attached to the eponymous fortress. the track itself is for The Fortress of Doom. And the Super Nintendo RPG music, you pretty much can't go wrong. I have not played this game, but it still sounds pretty good to me.
It's tough to go back to after Lufia 2, but yeah.
I imagined you'd say that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Has anybody ever named... Why would you name your fortress the Fortress of Doom? Because presumably you live there.
Well, maybe you're thinking it more in the Mount Doom sense, the Fortress of Fate.
Oh, okay.
We think of Doom as just being pejorative now, but
dude in a shitty mask.
Yeah, I mean, probably.
Yeah, exactly. We think of Doctor Doom, but Doom as fate has also got to be considered.
I'm thinking probably if somebody was living in the Fortress of Doom and they were thrown on the therapist's couch, they'd be told that they're projecting.
I just want to be left alone, so I gave it a menacing name.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to unpack there on the therapist's couch there if you live in the Fortress of Doom.
You're going to have to unpack it without us because it's time to go. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.